From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Taking no prisoners, this is Unleashed with Mark Morano on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT, continuing our second hour. All right, new book, claims with a brain expert. The climate crisis is physically changing our brains without us realizing it. The Weight of Nature by neuroscientist turned journalist Clayton Aldern claims that climate change is changing our brains physically, not making this up. I don't know what to tell you about this other than this is a new claim for me. But here's how he explains what's happening. He goes on, he blames heat waves. And he says, he explains how the far-reaching effects of the crisis, as the opportunity falls, our brains are sensitive machines, and research has shown that makes us more impulsive and less intelligent. So next time on a hot August day, you're suffering through and you're sweating a little bit, just realize you're a moron now because climate change is eating away at your brain. This is a real book. It's called The Weight of Nature. I've invited the author of the book, Clayton Page Aldern, on, and I haven't heard back. Don't know why. You think he'd be wanting to sell his book, wanting a little controversy? I'd be very respectful if he actually came on. He goes on, the psychological impact of extreme weather events. A study of low-income parents in New Orleans post-Katrina found that half of the 400 participants were likely suffering from PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder. My dad was in World War II, and they used to call it, not post-traumatic stress, but combat fatigue. That's what they used to call it before that word. Anyway, as I've already said, extreme weather events are not increasing. Heat waves, much worse 100 years ago in the United States by every measure of our United States government, by the Environmental Protection Agency records, all of this. The connection, he claims, between climate change and ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease. As temperatures rise and agricultural runoff goes untracked, blue-green algae blooms become more common. Researchers found ALS cases in communities around the bloom. So they're saying there's more toxic blooms because that's probably more of a pollution problem, not really climate change, if that's the case. And those have, of course, always been around. How the solution to this crisis lies in human resilience. The knowledge of how climate change is actively affecting us can be heavy, but through education and adaptability, we can respond by creating real change, both physically and emotionally. Okay, here's the solutions so your brain doesn't shrink due to climate change. Create green spaces. Fine. He says it creates a cooler environment. Well, all right. Create realistic harm reduction strategies to better impact and interact with the world and save lives from zoonotic diseases from warming temperatures. So they're doing that whole thing. Unchecked climate leads to more viruses. He's bought into every one of these. And our mental health, he's available for interview, except he's not available for interview on this show, apparently. Well, I'll let you know if he actually does agree to come on. My hope would be that he would actually do it. We'll see. Okay. As we, yesterday, in real time, breaking news on TNT Radio, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was announcing live during my broadcast his vice presidential pick. And I can honestly say, I think it's been universally panned. His pick is not winning anyone over. I think a lot of the hardcore RFK Jr. fans, disappointed. All of the RFK haters, disappointed. Especially the Trump supporters are probably very happy because he picked a left-wing San Francisco Bay Area tech executive who was married to Google's co-founder, Sergey Brin. And this can only attract more liberals, which will hurt Joe Biden in all these swing states. And I'll show you some analysis on that. I mean, Biden, this is RFK Jr.'s run for independent for president, looks to be doing major damage to Joe Biden. We'll get to that in a second. We're going to start. This is clip one, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. describing how Nicole Shanahan is someone, the factors into why he picked her. Clip one, RFK Jr.
And I wanted a vice president who shared my passion for wholesome, healthy foods, chemical-free, for regenerative agriculture, for good soils. And I found exactly the right person. And among other things, she has used over the past several years cutting-edge technology, including AI, to calculate the catastrophic health consequences of toxins in our soil, our air, our water, and our food. Technology has been a lifelong passion for my future vice president. This is important because I also wanted a vice president who shares my indignation about the participation of big tech as a partner in the censorship and the surveillance and the information warfare that our government is currently waging against the American people.
Okay, those are all decent reasons, especially if you're RFK Jr. These are all on paper, those make sense. What doesn't make sense is he had people like Jesse Ventura, who I think would have been huge ad to his ticket. Aaron Rodgers, which would have been skyrocketing ad to his ticket, like beyond belief. I mean, I think he floated Arnold Schwarzenegger, but Arnold Schwarzenegger, I don't think qualifies for president. So I don't think that would have flown very far. But no one's very excited about this. But anyway, let's hear Nicole Shanahan, RFK Jr.'s vice presidential pick, talking about how she left the Democratic Party and she's trying to welcome all parties and voters. Clip two.
In fact, the very failure of both parties to do their job to protect their founding values has contributed to the decline of this country in my lifetime. Maybe that's why I see so many Republicans disillusioned with their party as I become disillusioned with mine. If you are one of those disillusioned Republicans, I welcome you to join me, a disillusioned Democrat, in this movement to unify and heal America. This independent movement comes at a time of extreme division in America that threatens to tear this country apart. Yes, let's fix it.
I don't know. I think this is universally disappointing. Imagine if he had Tulsi Gabbard up there on that podium. That would have, he would have skyrocketed probably, you know, 10 points in every state across the country in polling. I mean, this is not an exciting pick. I'm sorry. I'd say most people in the San Francisco Bay Area where she's from never heard of her. And if they have, it's just because she was married to Google's co-founder, Sergey Brin. So Robert Reich was Bill Clinton's labor secretary. I met Robert Reich for Rush Limbaugh, the television show. In fact, I tried to show the clip on this show, but the only footage we had was someone's YouTube posting, and it was really horrible quality. We couldn't show it. But I got in more trouble for my interview with Robert Reich for Rush Limbaugh's TV show than probably any other single interview I ever did for Rush Limbaugh, the television show, when I worked for him as his Washington, D.C. correspondent. And the reason is because we filmed him. He was very short. He's, I don't know his actual height. He's probably 4'7", 4'10", something. He may be shorter. And we filmed him with me standing there, and just to the top of his head is on the screen. This was done. Rush Limbaugh's producers wanted me to have some fun with this because Limbaugh always made fun of his height. You know, it was a different time. You know, it was silly. Fun stuff. I got more attacks for making fun of his height and showing that video because you just see his eyes and his forehead. I would like to show you the clip sometime unless we get, you know, banned by the internet superstar. Anyway, I digress. This is Robert Reich, loyal Biden voter, Democrat Party operative, former Clinton labor secretary, angry just that RFK's even running and not liking his vice president either. Clip two, or actually this is clip three, Robert Reich.
RFK's running mate, Nicole Shanahan, was picked solely because she has so much money. I mean, talk about a cynical ploy. I mean, we are in an era where big money is rotting, poisoning our political system. And so somebody who is already a spoiler, who's there for no reason other than what? His own ego. To choose somebody who's going to help him be even more of a spoiler because she has a lot of money to be his vice president? I mean, can you imagine? Is anybody else outraged about this? You should be.
Now, interesting thing is, I think Robert Reich is on to something there. I mean, I think that is the reason RFK Jr. picked her. She's a major campaign donor. She funded his big Super Bowl ad that compared him to his uncle, John F. Kennedy. And yeah, I don't know the machinations behind the scenes, but it does not capture the public imagination. I'm sorry. She doesn't seem particularly charismatic. She has no national following. He floats all these names and vets all these names that would have dramatic impact. Aaron Rodgers, Jesse Ventura, and Tulsi Gabbard. And we end up with, I can't even remember her name. I'm looking at my screen to remember her name. Nicole Shanahan. Maybe she'll prove us right. I don't know. But I got to tell you, you know, I've flirted many times with voting for RFK Jr. on this show, depending how angry I get at Donald Trump for his COVID lockdowns and never apologizing and his promotion of the vaccine, COVID vaccine. This makes it a lot harder for me. I don't know. And I need to find out more about her as time goes forward. But here's the interesting thing. This is now clip four, Jesse Waters of Fox News, on how RFK could play a major role in the election. Listen to some of this analysis. I think this is spot on. RFK is going to do major damage to Joe Biden. This is clip four. And this is similar to the way Ross Perot did damage to George H.W. Bush in 1992. And by the way, I have no regrets over George H.W. Bush losing in 1992. Not that I'm a huge Clinton fan, although I will say Clinton's second term was probably the greatest 4 years, you know, in terms of America. Budget surpluses. Yes, you heard that right. Economic growth, divided government in Washington. You had Republican Congress, Democrat president. You had spending restraints. You had taxing restraints. You had budget surpluses. You had dirt cheap energy. You had gas. I remember this well in DC suburb of Virginia, 1998, 99, 75 cents a gallon in the late 90s for gas under Bill Clinton's presidency. Not crediting all Bill Clinton. I'm telling you, it was the gridlock in Washington. I always said, whenever you have a government more focused on a sex scandal in Washington, like we did, the impeachment hearings, that's a good thing. Because it gets them distracted and they don't have time to come up with all new ways to spend money and raise taxes and overregulate society. And that was a great thing, actually, because that's, you know, that bipartisan gridlock that we had in the late 90s really produced some stuff. We talked about the peace dividend. The Soviet Union had collapsed years earlier. It was just a time of hope and adventure and excitement. Okay, this is why am I bringing up the 1990s? Because I was bringing up Ross Perot and how I was happy that George H.W. Bush lost because Bill Clinton was elected. I like the fact that because Bill Clinton was initially so over the top that he elected Republicans and we had gridlock for 6 of the 8 years of Bill Clinton's term. That's a good thing. And Bill Clinton was a pragmatist, not an ideologue, like say President Obama. Joe Biden isn't really in anything. But anyway, this is Jesse Waters and how RFK could play a major role, clip four.
A lot of people that I know who like RFK weren't thrilled with the choice. They were expecting someone a little bit more electrifying to kind of jolt that ticket and continue the momentum. There's a lot we don't know about her, but she has a lot of money, and you need a lot of money if you're running a third party. If you look at the polls, Judge, Joe's losing to Trump head-to-head in every battleground still. Mm-hmm. If you introduce RFK, he pulls from both, but he pulls more from Biden. Right now, he's polling in double digits in Arizona, Nevada, and Wisconsin, and basically at 8-9% in the rest of the swing states. If he gets on ballots and continues to get more FaceTime, he's going to be in double digits in all the major battlegrounds, and Biden will lose this election if he performs like these numbers say.
And that's, you know, that's exactly my thinking along all of this. And I've been one of those people flirting with RFK and go back and forth. Again, this just the choice fizzles. I mean, he's right about not having an impact, but it has a bigger impact. Now, had he picked a Jesse Ventura, I think it would have had a much bigger impact on like Donald Trump. But because he picked a left-wing tech executive, or at least former left-wing, I don't know anything about her, but she just doesn't electrify the ticket. Not now. Maybe she'll save, she'll save a baby from a well or something, and she'll become a national hero, and then it'll electrify the ticket. But absent something dramatic, I don't think this was a good pick. Maybe internally he needed the money, and she wouldn't give him, $500 million unless his super PAC wouldn't get funded unless he picked her. I don't know the machinations behind the scenes. I think I already used the word machinations earlier, so I will ban myself from using that word again. Okay. As you all know, they had the trial with Mark Stein versus Michael Mann, and there was the free speech trial of the century, climate trial of the century. Michael Mann was found to be correct, and Mark Stein had to pay damages and all kinds of things, and he was found to have libeled Michael Mann by this D.C. jury. And Michael Mann's gone on gloating. He's calling Republicans, essentially the threat to the planet, and Donald Trump's reelection would kill us. This is him on MSNBC with Al Vesey discussing the UN global climate red alert and how he sees the climate situation. So let's play clip 5. This is Penn State ClimateGate professor Michael Mann, who now, I should say, moved over to University of Pennsylvania, which housed my favorite scientist of all time, Dr. Robert Gegengack, who passed away last year. He was the head of the geology department there. He was incredible. He featured in my film Climate Hustle and Climate Hustle 2 with the aforementioned Kevin Sorbo, narrating, who was in the last hour talking about the new Chinese film. Anyway, Michael Mann on why you should care about climate change, clip 5.
It's not the end goal, but literally speaking, transferring from a combustion engine to an electric vehicle has very little effect on an individual. I mean, this dark future that Donald Trump portends about how they're going to take away our cars, it's just not true. A human can make the move from a gas combustion engine to an electric vehicle almost seamlessly.
Absolutely. And, when you do make that transition, you find you really like these vehicles. They don't make as much noise. They're just much smoother in how they operate. And if you, are somebody who likes a powerful car, you like to go fast, well, there are electric vehicles now that actually outcompete standard, gas engine vehicles when it comes to performance. And here's the thing. You alluded to this, Ali. It's part of a more comprehensive strategy. We need to, as we say, decarbonize the transportation sector. So we have to stop generating carbon emissions from transportation. But we need to make sure, if we're moving to electric vehicles, that electricity isn't coming from fossil fuel burning. And so we also need to, electrify transportation, and we need to decarbonize the power sector.
Now, interesting. That's Michael Mann telling us why we should all be buying EVs. First of all, they're very expensive. They're very impractical. And he's talking about, I'll get to what he said in a second about the recharging grid. But what's interesting about what he's saying is he's giving you reasons why they're just rah-rah great. Well, if that's the case, why the hell do you have to ban the competition? If they're so great, if they're so wonderful, if they're so fast, why do we have to ban gas-powered cars? As I've said many times, it's like a Super Bowl team showing up at the Super Bowl saying, hey, we are the world champions. We want the trophy. We ban the other team from entering the field. We don't need to play them. We're number one. Everyone should love us. We are great. We have the best running back. We have the best quarterback. That's what he's saying. And what he's adding is one other element that, yeah, even though you go to EVs, we got to make sure that you don't recharge in a fossil fuel grid, which is virtually impossible. I mean, that is impossible in the short term because 80% of our energy is coming from fossil fuels. So the idea here is there's still going to be severe driving restrictions, even if they get their fantasy of gas-powered car bans and EV restrictions. Listen to Michael Mann. All right, we have to take a break. When we come back, Roger Stone, former Trump aide, former Trump consultant, GOP operative, long time, seasoned political operative, speaker, pundit, New York Times bestselling author, will be joining the program. Stay tuned. We're going to have a riveting talk about Roger Stone versus the deep state. And of course, the 2024 elections, his analysis. We'll be right back. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT Stay tuned.
TNT's Jason Olborn.
What that sneaky World Health Organization, that private organization linked to the United Nations, is planning to do to take away yours and my medical sovereignty. Or pretending that they're not going to, of course, because it just so happens that they have got the ability to look into a crystal ball, see around corners, and tell us that there is yet another virus or disease or sickness coming for us. And the only way that we survive it is to do exactly what Tedros tells us to do, even though the man's not even a doctor. Can't even tell his own Ethiopian country on three separate occasions, goodness me, that they have had a cholera outbreak. Cholera characterized by acute watery diarrhea that, if not diagnosed correctly, can result in death. Well, on three occasions, Tedros's answer was, we didn't have good enough testing or testing available, so we didn't really know that it was cholera. That's the guy who's leading the world.
Weekends with Jason Olborn on today's News Talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission. So many people who had no history of heart illnesses have got it now, or blood clotting after the COVID-19 vaccination. Punish those who hurt people with COVID madness, lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right, we have with us longtime political operative Roger Stone joining the program, seasoned political operative, New York Times bestselling author, featured in the Netflix documentary, Get Me Roger Stone. And he's my hero because of what he has endured against the deep state. This is a man who CNN cameras went to his home early in the morning because they were tipped off, I guess, by the FBI and our law, federal law enforcement that, hey, this would make a good footage, a way to damage the president. Anyway, welcome to the program, Roger.
Great to be with you.
Thank you. Well, looking back at your whole career, you know, going back, I guess, to Richard Nixon, correct? Is that when it started?
That's when I got my start.
Yes, you got your start.
I cut my teeth with Richard Nixon, three campaigns for governor, later President Ronald Reagan. Served in the Senate as an assistant to Senator Bob Dole, one of the greatest Americans of the 20th century, would have been a great president, and probably one of the first people in the country as early as 1988. To urge Donald Trump to seriously consider running for president. So, it's been a long show, but I'll be honest with you. I'm just warming up, so.
Okay, let's go back. Right, tell us what you think the similarities between the takedown of Richard Nixon by our intelligence communities. We now know that, you know, Deep Throat, the connections, even Bob Woodward with the intelligence agency connections, and the, you know, the FBI director working to bring the Nixon presidency down. The parallels between how they brought Nixon down and what they attempted to do with Donald Trump, they seem eerily similar, but obviously they seem to be much more over the top and blatant with Trump, whereas much more hidden and secret with Nixon. Can you give us a comparison of those two attempts? They were successful with Nixon. I guess you could say I don't know if they were successful with Trump because you could consider them successful given what happened with voter fraud, but give us an analysis of that. You know, give us a little of the Nixon history of how he was taken down.
Sure. It's interesting that recently declassified documents from the federal government demonstrate that Central Intelligence Agency knew in advance of the plans to break into the Watergate, infiltrated the Watergate break-in team. Four of the eight Watergate burglars were actually on the active payroll and were reporting to their handlers at the CIA. The Senate Watergate Committee knew this. They refused to even allow a minority report by Senator Howard Baker to be published. And the Watergate prosecutors also knew this. What was Nixon's crime? Well, he was for peace. So the Central Intelligence Agency, the deep state of its day, Eisenhower called them the military-industrial complex. They opposed his initiative for a strategic arms limitation agreement with the Russians. They opposed his ending of the war in Vietnam. They opposed his initiative with China. And this is very important. At a time that China was a dirt poor, non-technological, backwards agrarian society. The fact that China poses a danger to this country today, that's not Richard Nixon's fault. You can blame the Bushes and the Clintons, who gave them most favored nation trading status, and the Clintons, who actually sold them our top military secrets in return for illegal campaign contributions. This is what weaponized China and made China the danger to the country that they are today. But Nixon's was seeking to reorganize the Central Intelligence Agency and our entire national security apparatus. He says it extensively both in his biography and in the biography of his chief of staff, Bob Alderman. And this was an existential threat, just as John Kennedy threatened these people. That was a bloody coup. In the case of Richard Nixon, it was a silent coup. So these same forces were really threatened by Trump. Why? Because Trump was not a neocon. Trump was opposed to war. Trump wanted to end the endless, incredibly expensive foreign wars that we had become embroiled in under Obama and under Bush and other Clinton, for that matter. And therefore, he was a threat to their entire worldview, and more importantly, a threat to the profitability of war. Now, there are some differences. Had there been an internet in 1974, I think Nixon would have survived. Richard Nixon had a monolithically negative press. There was no alternative to the press of the day. Today, Trump's election is only possible because in 2016, we had an unfettered, uncensored internet. That's why they fought so hard to bring censorship and cancellation to the internet in time for the 2020 election. I remember telling the president, I know you love Twitter, but someday they're going to ban you on it. And he said, that'll never happen. And of course, that's exactly what happened. Yeah. So I think there are a lot of parallels. I draw a direct line between those institutions that I believe were complicit in the murder of John Kennedy. I wrote a New York Times bestselling book on this, The Man Who Killed Kennedy. The case against LBJ, those who took out Nixon in a silent coup, and those who attempted to take out Trump. The irony of this is, of course, that the greatest single dirty trick in American political history, the greatest single abuse of power in the history of our country, was perpetrated by Barack Obama and Joe Biden and National Security Director Susan Rice, FBI Director Comey, CIA Director Brennan, who knowingly used falsified evidence, the Steele dossier, as the rationale for FISA warrants to spy on Trump, for the appointment of a special counsel to try to take him down. They knew from day one there was no Russian collusion. It was a fraudulent narrative. They knew it was a fraudulent narrative, but they used the full authority of the United States government and the extraordinary capabilities of our intelligence agencies to try to take down a duly elected president.
And we'll get right back to that. Just real quick, going back to Richard Nixon, August 1974, do you think he should have resigned or stayed and fought? I think back to like what Bill Clinton, remember there was actually pressure at one point for Bill Clinton to resign when Monica Lewinsky came out. He doubled down. Donald Trump's famous for doubling down. Do you think Richard Nixon, had he doubled down and not resigned, could have survived any impeachment inquiry, or was he on his way out one way or the other in 1974?
Because we had no alternative media, I don't think he could have survived. So had he not resigned, he would have been impeached and removed. If we had the internet in 1974, I would answer the question differently. But the press was so monolithic and it was so bitterly opposed to him. This is a hatred that begins in his early career when he exposes the Russian spy Alger Hiss. The media of the day insists that Hiss is innocent, that he's a loyal American. But fast forward to the collapse of the Soviet Union, our full access to KGB files. Guess what? Alger Hiss was a Russian spy. And he had burrowed into the highest levels of American government. So as much as I loved Nixon, I got to know him far better in his post-presidential years. I was very young when I worked for him. I was very junior and had no interface with him. I think in retrospect, he was faced with a fait accompli. His support in the country and his support in the Congress had collapsed. I think he sadly had no choice.
Okay. Now, let's go back to the Steele dossier and the intelligence community and coming after Trump for the Russia collusion hoax. Can you explain? Now, can we just run through, give us your involvement in how you got entangled with law enforcement, with this federal witch hunt, how you got raided and CNN cameras were there, how you went to jail, how you then proceeded, what your current legal status is. Let's run through your story because I think it's, you know, it's just been so much to absorb that viewers have really, it's really a hard thing to follow and understand. Go back to the Steele dossier and explain how you got ensnared in this and how the deep state, the ruthlessness and what it did to your life.
Yeah, there's basically two parts of this. One, I very definitely had a Twitter direct message exchange with a persona of somebody called Guccifer 2.0. I myself published that 28-word exchange. There's no evidence there of collaboration or collusion. It is alleged by the government that Guccifer 2.0 was a hacker who, it is alleged, hacked the Democratic National Committee and obtained the material that WikiLeaks would later publish. Here's the key point. My entire exchange with him took place 3 months after that material had already been published. Consequently, based on the content of our exchange, which is not at all incriminating, and the timing, it would be impossible for me to have been involved in any way in the obtaining of that material. Secondarily, I was told by a New York disc jockey comedian named Randy Credico, who had a lawyer who did work for WikiLeaks. She denied that on the stand in my trial. I think that's called perjury. That Hillary Clinton's material, that substantial material on Hillary Clinton and the DNC was in the possession of Julian Assange and that he would publish it in October. Pretty general, wouldn't you say? By the way, Assange himself said it in multiple interviews, but I said it in my Twitter feed. And therefore, it was alleged that Stone had coordinated the release of that material. That's completely false. The government produced no evidence of any of this at my trial. So basically, the real reason that I was charged, and I was charged with making false statements to Congress in my voluntary testimony before the House Intelligence Committee, if there was no Russian collusion, and there wasn't, if there was no WikiLeaks collaboration, what would be my motive to lie? I had none. So yeah, I made misstatements in my testimony, but none of them hid any underlying crime because there was no underlying crime to hide. The real reason I was charged, the real reason they had their epic raid on my home at 6 o'clock in the morning to arrest me for a nonviolent crime was to pressure me to testify against Donald Trump. In other words, Robert Mueller and his thugs, with unlimited legal power, with unlimited resources, unlimited money, unlimited manpower, couldn't find any evidence of Russian collusion because, well, none existed. So they sought to fabricate it. They wanted me to testify falsely that some the content of some 26 phone conversations between me and candidate Trump in 2016 had pertained to the WikiLeaks disclosures or some other Russian collusion. I refused to lie, which is why I was put through a Soviet-style show trial in Washington, D.C. Fortunately for me, 48 hours before I was to be remanded to a dank Georgia prison at 68 years old and with a lifelong history of asthma, President Trump realized that I had done nothing wrong other than be his friend and supporter. He commuted my sentence. Later that year, 2020, he gave me a full and unconditional pardon. Now, I lost my home. I lost my savings. I lost most of our insurance. I had to sell my car. My wife was diagnosed with cancer after this horrific experience, which I think was triggered by the stress of the situation. But through the healing power of Jesus Christ, she's still with us, and I am back on my feet. Those are the facts put as succinctly as I can put them. There's a distortion machine out there. Here's the great thing about the left. Doesn't matter how debunked or disproved or discredited any of their BS is, if you just wait a few weeks, they'll recycle it yet again as if it's true. I'll give you another example. Paul Manafort shared polling information with a Russian asset named Konstantin Kalemnik. Couple problems with that. On the date that supposedly happened, the Trump campaign had done no proprietary polling. There was no non-public polling to share. And Konstantin Kalemnik was not a Russian intelligence asset. As Matt Taibbi has proven, he was a U.S. Intelligence asset. But after Robert Mueller and his thugs spent $30 million, they had to come up with some plausible claim of Russian collusion. And that's what they hang their hat on. It's false. Covered very well in Manafort's book, by the way. But look at Taibbi's original research. There was no polling to share, and the man he shared it with was working for the United States government.
Wow. So is there any disappointment of a lot of the current Trump aides who are cooperating with some of the prosecutors to get lighter sentences? I mean, I remember looking back like at Watergate. I always looked at G. Gordon Liddy as the hero, right? He went to jail. He refused to cooperate. Because if you're doing whatever he was involved in, he was taking the heat for it. Do you have any disappointment with any of the current Trump officials who are cooperating in order to get the lighter sentences?
First of all, if you look at Georgia law, some of the things they've pled to are not even felonies. So I can't blame somebody for wanting to not be destroyed both financially and personally. But there's no underlying crime in Georgia. I'm sorry. But I've listened to the phone conversation. I've read the entire transcript between Donald Trump and Secretary of State Raffensperger. The claim that Trump told him to find 11,680 votes is false. What he told him is, you have already inadvertently counted 11,860 votes that were not legitimate. People who were dead, people who had registered from post office boxes, which is illegal in Georgia, people who no longer lived in the state. When you deduct them from the total, I would be the winner. It's not a crime. That was hooked up into be a crime by Fannie Wills, who is a bought and paid for prosecutor, directed by George Soros. Now, I don't know, and I wasn't involved in any of this, although you wouldn't know that from watching MSNBC. I'm sorry, I don't know John Eastman. I don't know Kenneth Chesborough. I don't know Sidney Powell. I think I exchanged emails with her once many years ago. I wasn't involved in any of this, but Ari Melbourne demands that I be indicted for my involvement in Georgia, which is to say none whatsoever.
Yes. All right. Well, when you hear when the average person hears Donald Trump had classified documents at Mar-a-Lago and they made it out to be some, national crime. And of course, Joe Biden had him in his garage and Mike Pence had him. How are they getting away with using these national security concerns as a way to essentially torpedo presidencies?
Well, I mean, look, I'm not an attorney, and I stress that, but I really believe Trump had the authority to not only have but retain classified documents as president. Joe Biden never had the authority as vice president to have and retain classified documents. And the special counsel in that case said he willfully violated the law in that regard. So my attitude is, and if I'm wrong about the Presidential Records Act, either they should both be prosecuted or neither one of them should be prosecuted. But to prosecute Trump, I think that prosecution is flawed, but not prosecute Biden, well, that's the two-tier justice system that we're so used to.
And do you see a way out of this two-tiered system as currently? I mean, this, we've weaponized the deep state. We've weaponized the media, and they just seem like they will do anything. The idea of, Donald Trump being charged by random Democrat attorney generals of all kinds of things, from rape to you name it. How do we ever prevent this from happening? Again, it has to be the public, right? There's no real reform. You can't reform state attorney generals. But this is beyond even what they did with Nixon and going after Donald Trump.
Look, there's one way, and there's only one way. We have to elect a new chief executive. That would be Donald Trump. And he needs to clean house. He needs to clean house at the Justice Department. He needs to clean house in our intelligence agencies. And we need to remove those permanent bureaucrats who were there under Bush and they're still there under Obama. We need a top to bottom change. That can only happen that one way. That's through the democratic process of a free, fair, honest, and transparent election. And if we have such an election, I think Donald Trump will win such an election. And that is the only way we can clean up the system and save the country.
All right, we take a break. We're talking with Roger Stone, a former Trump, I shouldn't say former, a Trump consultant, and someone who stared down the deep state, went to jail, and actually held strong. So Roger Stone will be right back. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the 2024 campaign, voter integrity, and also RFK Jr. and you know, some of your predictions. We'll be right back on Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. Stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Susan Lucci. I never thought about heart disease until I had my own heart event. At first, like so many other women out there, I ignored my symptoms. A slight pressure on my chest, shortness of breath. I thought, I don't have time to be sick. I had a 90% blockage in my main artery and a 75% blockage in the adjacent artery. I received two stents in my arteries, stents developed through research funded by the American Heart Association. Those stents saved my life. I'm so grateful to the American Heart Association. Their research helped save my life. I can enjoy life with my children, my grandchildren, and my friends. Please, listen to your heart. The only reason I'm here today is because I did. Learn more about the American Heart Association's life-saving work at helpheart.org.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
See, Smokey thinks I'm funny.
Taking no prisoners, this is Unleashed with Mark Morano on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
And we're back on Unleashed with Mark Morano. We're continuing our discussion with Roger Stone. How would you compare and contrast federal prosecutors and media dealings with Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, and the whole Biden crime syndicate versus Donald Trump, secret documents, and all the other charges against him? Has anything even surprised you, a longtime operative here, and how they've treated Biden and Hunter?
Well, if we had evidence, for example, that Donald Trump Jr. or Eric Trump had gotten millions of dollars from China, Russia, Ukraine, Romania, well, they would have been prosecuted and they'd be in jail by now, particularly if they hadn't filed a Foreign Agents Registration Act. One of the great falsehoods you see constantly is, Hunter Biden didn't pay his taxes, but Roger Stone didn't pay his taxes. It's a big difference. He failed to report $10 million in income. I reported every penny of my joint income taxes. I simply ran out of the ability to pay. After Mueller bankrupted me, I could no longer pay. So yeah, today I owe the IRS $2 million. But 3/4 of that is interest and penalties, which they refuse in negotiation to lower. So yeah, for 8 years I was on a payment plan. For 8 years I made payments every month. For 8 years I never missed a payment. I was never late with a payment. And I would have kept paying until they essentially bankrupted me. But the assertion that I did not report income or that I hid assets, that is categorically false. Hunter Biden, on the other hand, didn't report $10 million, just slightly less, an income, but the U.S. attorney in Delaware waited long enough until the statute of limitations had run so he could not be charged with that crime. Apples and oranges. This idea that I failed to pay and pay no penalty for it. No, I'll be paying the IRS every month for the rest of my life. And the vast majority of what I'm paying is interest and penalties. The actual amount I owe the government in real tax, unpaid taxes, is less than $250,000. It was once, by the way, much, much more, but I paid it down. So we have a two-tier justice system that is just outrageous. Joe Biden, some of that money clearly got to Joe Biden. There is no question about that. Yet the House Republicans don't seem to have the fortitude to do what they need to do, which is to vote articles of impeachment against him.
All right, we'll see. And tell us your analysis of January 6th. I don't know if I've actually heard your analysis, because it seems to me they've criminalized a presidential candidate's entire supporters by using this. And how much of intelligence agencies were involved, in your opinion, in January 6th as well?
Again, it appears to be very extensive, but you'll see all over the internet that Roger Stone was planning in a war room at the Willard Hotel with John Eastman, who I've never met, with Kenneth Chesbrough, who I've never met, who Boris Epstein, who at that time I had never met, with Rudy Giuliani. Actually, I think about it, I saw Rudy walk through the hotel, the lobby. We never even exchanged greetings. So there's a lot of disinformation out there. I think the investigations in the House have slowly chipped away at the fact that this was indeed a setup. This is really simple. Let's ask one tough question. Those giant doors that have to be opened mechanically from the inside, who opened them? Who opened them? I favor a January 6th committee to reinvestigate the January 6th investigation. This woman, Cassidy Hutchinson, she testified that President Trump ordered his chief of staff, Mark Meadows, to call Roger Stone and General Flynn on January 5th to find out what would happen on January 6th. That's a perjurious lie. I've never talked to Mark Meadows or communicated with him in any way in my entire life. But I think I met him once in a green room when he was a congressman before Trump was president. And either did General Flynn. So why isn't she being held responsible for what is completely a fabricated lie? The January 6th committee is was a manufactured for television hoax. And they suborn perjury, and I think they should be held responsible, but I don't think they will be.
All right, looking at 2024, what impact do you think RFK Jr. will have on a Trump-Biden matchup, and what did you think of his running mate pick, which I keep looking up her name, I think it's Shanahan, I can't remember her first name, seemed rather underwhelming. What's your take on him?
Yeah, I was very, very disappointed. She's a Biden mega donor. She's a down-the-line progressive Democrat. I believe, by the way, that she's vaccinated and boosted, which would be mean her views are contrary to her running mate. I think her great attractiveness was her enormous wealth. She was married to the guy who founded Google. She evidently got billions of dollars in a divorce settlement, so she can now finance Robert Kennedy's campaign. I don't think he's going to get on the ballot in enough states to matter. But if you were a Trump supporter and you were even contemplating possibly voting for him, how could you vote for him with this radical left progressive as his running mate? His great appeal, to the extent that he had any, was that he couldn't be bought. However, I think he just got bought. What makes us think that Nicole Shanahan, just because she's rich, how does that qualify her to be president of the United States? So it really tells you where his candidacy is. I think in the end, he takes more votes from Biden than he does from Trump. But that's if he can succeed on getting in the ballot on enough states to make a difference. So far, he's only on the ballot in four states. Getting on the ballot, you don't just walk in and sign a form and pay a fee. It's a very arcane, complicated, difficult, manpower intense, legally tricky challenge. Very hard to get on the ballot, particularly as an independent candidate. And they give you a very short time frame in which you have to do it. You have to collect tens of thousands of signatures. Those signatures have to be perfect, and they have to be filed. It has to be a certain number of them per congressional district. You're dealing with 50 different state laws. So it's premature to talk about how his candidacy might impact the general election. But with this far left running mate, I think it turned off a number of those who would otherwise vote for Donald Trump. I think they're now more likely to vote for Trump than ever.
Yeah, I think you're onto something there. Do you think he would have had much more impact staying as a Democrat running in Iowa, New Hampshire, a la Pat Buchanan 1992, Pat Buchanan 1990, Democrat National Committee's corruption and suppressing candidates challenging their favorite nominee? The idea he couldn't have done that because then he wouldn't have any chance at ballot access? Or don't you think that was a strategic blunder on his part? Because he could have had, he probably could have won one of those, probably the New Hampshire primary potentially, or done major damage to Biden.
Look, I think he should have stayed in the party of his uncle and his father. I think his chances were as good of becoming president there than they are in this independent and nascent bid. I think he had a unique opportunity because of his family name and his heritage to expose the corruption of the Democratic Party. But here's the sad truth. He wasn't going to get elected president as a Democrat, and he's not going to get elected president as an independent. I think he would have had more influence within his party, but we'll see. It remains to be seen. This decision, which, by the way, also leaked. So his efforts to build a huge amount of suspense about it were really undone by members of his own campaign staff who were unhappy with the choice and went out and leaked it 10 days ago. And I think most people look at it realistically and said, well, he did it for the money.
Yeah, I mean, it really does appear that way. All right. Well, we have, the voter integrity issues. What's going to be different in 2024? Can Donald Trump actually overcome it, particularly in the key swing states, the Pennsylvania, the Wisconsin, Michigans and all? Can he win this election? What's your prediction?
Yes, I think he definitely can. I have a lot of confidence in the new leadership, the Republican National Committee. I have particular confidence in Chris LaCivita, who is the Trump aide who is overseeing that operation. I talked to people who were in Pennsylvania during the immediate aftermath of the 2020 election. There was no mechanism in place, none. That will not happen this time. There will be lawyers who are there. There will be an effort to have proper observation consistent with law. We're going to have to file some lawsuits, as some have already been filed in advance. Yes, I do think we can have a free, fair, honest, and transparent election. It's going to be a fight because the COVID-19 based loosening of state election laws are really what allowed a lot of this fraud. But we have the Supreme Court case brought by Carrie Lake and others challenging the machines. I think that's very important. There's an important federal case out of Georgia also challenges the machines in front of Judge Totenberg, who, while she may be an Obama appointee and a Democrat, seems to be an honest judge. There's a long way to go on this. We're not ready today, but I think in the end, they're not going to have this ability that they had last time to literally physically throw Republican observers out, lock the doors, and jam through 300,000 paper ballots that pop up out of nowhere. That's not going to happen again. This can be monitored in real time. The Republican Assembly groups, the American Republican Assembly, doing an excellent job with software of presenting to the boards of elections in various states bad addresses that they found on the voter list to clean up the rolls. I think our next election is going to be much fairer. Whether it can be fair enough to bear out the final real result, i.e. the election of Trump, well, that is yet to be seen.
What's your view of the 2020 election? Did Donald Trump win that, or did Joe Biden get more votes for president than anyone in the entire history of the United States?
Well, since I'm already censored virtually every place, I might as well tell you what I really think. There's no way in the world. There's no way in the world that Joe Biden got 81,000 votes. It is not coincidental in multiple states that the vote counting is shut down and then paper ballots miraculously pop up out of nowhere. So it is my opinion that there were an enormous number of irregularities and anomalies in the 2020 count. And I think it is highly likely that Trump actually won. Now, they want to criminalize that, just saying that, they want to make that a crime, but I think under the First Amendment that's still permissible, at least for the time being.
Yeah, for the time being. All right. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Roger Stone, GOP consultant. And are you officially predicting Trump's going to win, or you're saying he can win? What is your actual prediction?
I believe in my heart that he will win. I certainly believe that he can win, but I've been in politics long enough to know that overconfidence is really dangerous. Also that in politics, a day is a lifetime. But he's doing extraordinarily well so far. He set historic records in the way he won the nomination. So put me down as cautiously optimistic.
All right. Thank you so much, Roger Stone, GOP operative and consultant. Thank you for joining Unleashed today. We appreciate it.
Great to be with you.
All right. And we will see you next time on TNT. Mark Morano signing off. Thanks for watching.